Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the BT Powerhouse Podcast. This is number 73. As always, my name is Thomas Bendit. I am the manager of BT Powerhouse and your host for the podcast. We're back after a short break. I want to say a week and a half, 2 weeks. Hasn't been too long, but we are back with another podcast here. I know a lot of the Big Ten focus has shifted over to football. You know, for good reason. We're only, 18, 17 days away or so from the season. But, basketball still coming up as well. It always sneaks up here in October and November, but a lot going on. We have a few interesting topics. We're going to hit on a couple of the non-con schedule releases here over the last couple of weeks, particularly Illinois and Michigan. Also going to touch on Purdue's international trip to Spain, where some interesting results. I was kind of intrigued by the results over there, and certainly for a couple key Boilermakers heading into this year. And last, Rutgers picked up a commit over the last, 2 weeks ago or so, a late 2016 edition. Going to hit on him briefly, and should be interesting. Should be interesting. But to help us break it down, we have Josh Stern, who's been on our podcast a few times here, part of the BT Powerhouse staff. Josh, how's it going?
Pretty good, Thomas. How are you?
Doing well. Excited to chat some Big Ten. Been a little bit here. How's your summer hanging?
It's been good. It's been weird. As you were saying before, no college basketball, no college football. So I'm excited for the fall. The Olympics have been great, but there's really nothing, at least for guys like you and me, like college sports. So I'm excited to get back to the fall and have that back in our lives once again.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess we should note as well, Big Ten representing pretty well over in Rio. I'm trying to remember her name, the Indiana swimmer. People are going to kill me for this.
Did great there down the Russian. Say.
Can you repeat that? Sorry.
Lily King?
Yes, Lily King. Okay. Lily King killed it, took down Russia, and their previously reported, juicing athlete. And then Draymond Green also playing for Team USA. They got a win over Argentina tonight, so they move on. But, of course, this isn't an Olympic podcast. This is a Big Ten Hoops podcast. So let's dive into it. Let's start with, as I said, a couple scheduling releases here over the last couple of weeks. We'll start with Illinois, who came out, last week. But they released their non-con. A lot of these dates, were already known, having the schedule come out so late. But, the big ones, they get West Virginia in New York City. Actually, in Brooklyn, part of New York. They get North Carolina State as part of the Big Ten ACC Challenge. They get PCU. They get their annual game with Missouri. They're also playing BYU in Chicago, and they're either going to play Florida State or Temple based on what they do against West Virginia. I'd say those are probably the big notable games. Josh, have you had a chance to check out the schedule and first impressions for the Illini on the schedule?
I got a chance to look at it a little bit. First impressions are, this is a really, really nicely put together schedule. In recent years, teams across the Power Five conferences have been a little bit reluctant to play one another. But I think that Illinois did a really good job here. I mean, obviously you have a team like West Virginia that had a great season last year. A team like North Carolina State in the ACC, a little bit of a down year for them, but still a really good team. VCU's always tough in the A-10. And then I like scheduling BYU, not your traditional Power 5 team. Still a really good team year in, year out. They have a bunch of great players there out in Provo. And Missouri, too, having the BYU game and the Missouri game 4 days apart kind of makes for an interesting schedule. But, no, I really like what John Gross and his staff did here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, last year I was like in love with Illinois' non-conference schedule. I'm sure Illini fans are cringing as I say that, just based on how the season went last year. But Illinois, to me, for their money, is they're the best schedulers in Big Ten basketball. And the reason I say that is because they get names, they get enough interesting games where the fans will be excited. You know, they're big games to go to at home. You know, they kind of have the renovation, so that's a little bit of a weird situation. But they also have – they avoid the games that are potential resume, you know, bombs, as I call them. They play teams that are good enough, likely still wins. You know, for instance, they're playing Detroit. They're playing Central Michigan. Those are both good teams, but probably not good enough to actually beat Illinois. You know, they're good enough to pull up the upset, but you're talking about, you know, certainly less than 25% odds of those teams knocking off Illinois. And certainly, you know, with them both coming in Champaign. So I really like this schedule. There are going to be tough games, and there are, you know, assuming Illinois isn't either way better or way worse than kind of the season predictions are, you know, a lot of these games are going to be toss-ups. You know, North Carolina State in particular, you know, they have a great, great recruiting class coming in this year. They're going to be really tough, but Illinois gets them at home. They get them early. You know, theoretically, those recruits are still trying to find their footing for the Wolfpack. You know, VCU, oddly, they're playing in Miami. You know, that's a winnable game on both sides, but going to be tough. West Virginia, probably a loss. But, you know, you'll get an opportunity to make it up with either Florida State or Temple. So I like the schedule. Odds are they're probably going to lose two games, maybe three, if, you know, if they really perform well. But it should be interesting. Any big games stand out to you? Do you think there's any potential bombs in this schedule for an upset or anything?
No, I mean, the interesting thing that you said, and I completely agree with, is obviously you have the bigger names, but the smaller names too. I mean, Northern Kentucky's been decent in years past. Detroit's pretty good. Winthrop's pretty good. Central Michigan. So even those teams that are near the bottom aren't, I mean, I know, for example, for Michigan, because obviously you and I both went to Michigan and we cover Michigan. Michigan sometimes will schedule teams in the RPI 250 or 300 that'll be resume killers. I don't see any of those teams really, except for, I don't know who McKendree is. I'm looking at their schedule. But for the most part, most of those games are going to be against, like, at least solid to above average teams that won't be total RPI killers. You also touched on the geography of the games. In terms of recruiting, I think it's great. I mean, obviously, you're based just outside of Chicago, and you're actually playing a game in Chicago at the United Center. So that's really, really smart. You have a game in St. Louis. You have a game in Miami. You have a game in New York. So you're pretty much telling recruits, hey, we are looking to try to expand our recruiting focus to not just the Midwest, but around the entire country. We're going to come to a city near you. Here's why you should come watch us play. So I really like that aspect of the schedule as well.
Yeah, that's an interesting aspect to add. I know when I was looking it through, they do have a couple potential bombs. I know the Southeast Missouri State is one. McKendree, they have not popped up. They're not on KenPop, so I'm not sure. I didn't do any research into them further. I'm going to have to look at that. But IUPUI is another one that could be a potential issue. But yeah, otherwise, all these teams are good enough to where beating them, for the most part, should add to the resume, at least theoretically. So, you know, outside of the, you know, a bomb game or two, you know, potential, good scheduling, I at least think. I would put a, you know, near an A on this thing. I know West Virginia isn't necessarily the top A game that some people want. You know, everybody always wants Duke or Kentucky or something, but I think, you know, given their recent years and given how some of these other teams have performed, this schedule is more than good enough to foster an NCAA tournament berth, assuming Illinois, you know, shows up to play, which hasn't exactly happened the last couple of years. But with that, we'll jump into the other schedule release, and that is Michigan, of course, as you mentioned a couple minutes ago. Really, to me, it's, you know, very split. You know, I wrote an article on this for Today's U a couple weeks ago, and my takeaway was, you know, marquee opponents and cupcakes. I think this is a schedule where virtually every game is a really tough game, or should just be a complete blowout? First, do you agree with that? And what's your takeaway, if you assuming you do, what's your takeaway on what that could mean for Michigan this year?
I mean, I definitely agree with the cupcake part, but, you know, it's kind of hard to schedule those games where you're finding really, really quality teams that want to come and play that pretty much know that there's a good chance they're going to get beat. Like you said, Illinois is one of those teams that's very good at doing that. Michigan, unfortunately, was unable to in terms of slightly better than the RPI 200, 250 teams like that. But no, I don't think all of the teams with the marquee names are going to be games that are going to be really, really close. I mean, a team like Virginia Tech, not the flashiest name of the ACC Big Ten Challenge by any stretch. They're going to be very good this year, Virginia Tech, but you know, a name that when people think of, they think of basketball mediocrity. I mean, I love the home and home with UCLA. I love the home and home with Texas. They'll flip. Michigan will go to Austin next year, and the Bruins will come to Ann Arbor next year as well. And I think the South Carolina game is good too. I know that there were rumors about the Cincinnati game, but it fell during the finals period, so they were unable to play that game. John Beilein and Frank Martin have a relationship, so that seemed like a very solid game as well. And you go to New York again, and I know John Beilein has an enormous fan base in New York, and he tries to get Michigan to go to New York and play either Madison Square Garden or Barclays every year. So overall, I'm really pleased with it. You know, your starters are going to be veterans. You have presumably three seniors and two juniors that will start, but the bench is a huge unknown, and you need those early season games against mediocre teams and against good teams to test those guys. So no, overall, I like the schedule a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm quite, you know, as a person, you know, as a Michigan fan, which I've stated numerous times on this podcast, I'm very excited about, you know, playing Texas, playing UCLA, you know, potentially playing Pitt, playing Marquette, you know, these bigger names, teams, you know, people you know, big players. I'm really excited about that side of it. You know, Michigan playing at UCLA just sounds like a lot of fun. I think it'll make for a great game. However, with that said, this is going to be a very tricky schedule because, you know, even some of the, you know, quote-unquote easier marquee – and again, I'm splitting this schedule into cupcakes and what I would refer to as marquee games. And the reason why is because pretty much outside of the big-name teams that you were talking about, all of these teams were pretty much awful last year. You know, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but the majority of these are below 200 on KenPom from last year. So you lose to these, they're massive losses. They're all coming at home. Michigan, you know, with five returning starters, a ton of experience, no reason to lose any of these games. And if they do, it will be a catastrophe.
So my question is, as a Michigan, as a John Beilein, as an experienced team, and, you know, how do you get teams, I guess the question is, why don't you schedule any decent in-state teams, a Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan, obviously they beat you, but Detroit, you know, Bakari Alexander, the assistant coach from Detroit, went there. A team like Milwaukee, you know, another assistant, LaVal Jordan, who went to Milwaukee. I'm sure they try to play Wisconsin every year because that's an in-state game, but how come John Beilein isn't trying to at least get teams where he knows that they'll probably want to play? Someone like Oakland. I mean, I know that a guy like Greg Campy would be unbelievably fired up about the chance to bring his guys into Ann Arbor, and that would be a really good game and a really good test for Michigan. So I'm curious to know what you think is the reason that those teams either aren't being offered by Michigan, if the Michigan problem, or they're declining the invitation to play in the Chrysler Center.
Well, I will say flat out that, you know, whatever you know your belief is on why it happens, it is 100% a Michigan-based decision. You know, they used to play Oakland every year, and you know, Greg Campy and Oakland have been very open that Michigan decided to end that series. You know, whatever the reason may be, they don't want to play the in-state schools, or theoretically the in-state schools that have the ability to take them down. You know, Ohio State has done this a lot in recent years as well. And really, I can't blame them. You know, if you're trying to hold your own in your state to recruit, you know, you don't want Eastern or Dayton or whoever coming into your house and beating you. It's really embarrassing. It really hurts you in recruiting. With that said, I don't necessarily think this is a bad schedule that will, you know, it has to hurt you. But, you know, if you slip up against one of those bad teams, it's going to be a big blow. And if they could very well get into a situation similar to last year, I know they had the Texas win, but where you beat all the crappy teams, you lose to all the good teams, and you end up looking with a really empty resume when you come into conference play. You know, you don't have at least a couple of those fringe top 100 wins. You know, this is all theoretical, but, you know, it wouldn't be that shocking if, you know, they lose on the road to South Carolina, who was a pretty good team last year. You know, they lose to Virginia Tech, who looks like an NCAA tournament team this year. You know, on the road at UCLA, not an easy game. Texas, they were a top 25-ish team last year. You know, these are tough games and they're winnable, but they're also losable. So, I mean, I doubt Michigan loses all of those, but to me, it's a risk not worth taking. I'd like to see them play a couple more okay teams instead of the bottom of the barrel, but it definitely seems to be a D-line scheduling strategy, at least the last couple of years. So any final thoughts here on the schedule before we jump into Purdue? I guess, or disagreements with my assessment?
No, I think you're right. But I think, you know, last year's team definitely underperformed. I mean, you didn't have Karras, you didn't have Spike. Your two senior leaders weren't there. You now have the seniors. All these guys have a year of experience, all starting together and gelling together. I think this is a big season. I think it's a big season for Beilein. I think it's a big season bringing in two new assistant coaches. And you're right. But if you are able to get these wins and maybe you leave the non-conference with only two or three losses, you're setting yourself up really nicely in Big Ten play. So I think it can really help them, but you're right. I think if you end up with five or six losses, it can really hurt you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. And with that, you know, I should also mention, we didn't talk about it much, but, you know, Illinois in a crucial season for John Gross. You know, everybody has him on the hot seat. I think even Illinois fans would admit that. So, you know, Illinois is in a similar situation where they got to perform. You know, you can't just kind of trip through non-conference play. So both these teams looking to make a bigger splash than the last couple of years in the non-conference. But with that, I'll jump quickly into Purdue's international trip. For the people not as familiar with this, the College Hoops teams are allowed to take an international trip, I want to say every 4 or 5 years. I believe it's four.
Every 4 years, yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so every 4 years they get to make a trip. You know, some of them will go to Canada. I believe Indiana and Wisconsin did that a couple years ago. You know, some will go to Spain. I think MSU went to Italy, all over the place. But it's a chance for them not only to bond as a team, but also to play some international competition. The quality of the competition is always up for debate. Generally, it seems like the Big Ten, you know, performs pretty well against the international competition, but again, always up for debate. Not exactly a great measure. Purdue, they played four games. They went undefeated in the four games. Their last one, they won 117-66, so demolishing the Euro Basketball Academy, which no idea who they are. You know, they ran through most of these games. My big takeaways, you know, watching the stat sheets, watching a little bit of the games, you could see a lot of them you didn't really have access. But Caleb Swanigan, absolutely on fire. The guy just dominated during the four games. He averaged 18.5 points a game, averaged 10.8 rebounds, broke a backboard, I guess, in one of the games, which never hurts. So I think the Swanigan hype definitely seems legit so far. Again, asterisk, you know, European competition, whatever they're playing. But I personally, I felt like he was going to be a Big Ten Player of the Year contender before. Certainly seems that way now. The other big takeaway for me, you know, the consistent criticism with Purdue over the last 2 years has been outstanding front court, solid wing group, and disaster of a backcourt. They really are looking for backcourt contributors. You know, they have Swanigan, they have Haas, they have Vince Edwards, but they really need guys to step up in the backcourt. You know, they brought in Spike Albrecht from Michigan as a transfer, and their one addition on the recruiting trail was Carson Edwards. He had a really nice performance in Spain, averaged 16.3 points a game. I'm looking for his assist. His assist-to-turnover ratio wasn't impressive. It was actually 9-9, and he averaged 2.5 rebounds a game. But he shot well from long range, which is something Purdue hasn't been great at the last 2 years. And again, you know, at least he had a 1-to-1 assist-turnover ratio. But he looks like a guy that could be a little bit of a, I don't know if necessarily a sleeper, but you know, if he could come in and give them some valuable minutes, that would be huge for Purdue. But other than that, you know, nothing stood out too much to me. Vince Edwards underwhelmed a little bit, but yeah. Otherwise, you know, I thought Swanigan stats wise looked good, and Carson Edwards turning some heads. Josh, did you have any takeaways? Anything about either the trip or Purdue as we're chatting here about this?
No, I mean, I didn't really get to watch much of the games. I saw a couple of highlights. But just looking at the box scores, obviously it wasn't the best competition. But obviously you see Swanigan, 18.5 points per game, almost 11 rebounds. Someone like Isaac Haas, 13.5 points per game, almost 7 rebounds. I mean, those are going to be guys that Matt Painter is going to be looking for 28 to 32 or 33 minutes a game. Swanigan potentially even more. AJ Hammonds is gone. So those are your two big workhorses. I'm really curious to see kind of what they do. And then you were talking about the backcourt. Spike Albrecht, you know, Michigan guy, Michigan transfer, played 69 minutes, but didn't have a huge impact. Only scored 4 points in his four games for Purdue. It'll be interesting to see how he does. And somebody like Ryan Klein too picked up the scoring. He was actually pretty good on the trip, but the two of them are definitely going to combine to play that point guard and potentially backup point guard role. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what Painter does with them in the fall and then going forward as well.
Yeah, I'd agree that backcourt is, you know, none of this is rocket science, but the backcourt is obviously the place to watch for Purdue coming into next season. You know, they have a lot of interesting guys. You know, you mentioned Klein. He really came on last year, you know, and he appears to be trending up. You know, they bring in Carson Edwards. They have P.J. Thompson. They have a lot of guys. They need a guy. They need a starter. That's really what they need. And, you know, not a guy who just, you know, starts the game, but a legitimate guy who can be a quality starter. Maybe Spike Albrecht is that guy. You know, he was one of the better passers in Spain, at least statistically. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. But definitely some interesting tidbits on Swanigan and Edwards out of Europe. And we'll have to see on the court. You know, certainly how things look, it looks like Purdue will be one of the top-end Big Ten guys heading into next season. But before we end the old podcast, one other big thing to hit on, and that was Rutgers picking up a commit. And it was, I will probably butcher his last name, but Eugene Omori. Starts with an O. But he is a small forward, you know, quasi-wing player. He's listed at 6'6". Not a ton of attention, at least in the rating services, but he comes out of Canada. He apparently was a big-time player in his high school. I believe that's what – I know Canada has this weird, like, college high school system, so I don't want to say. But basically, in his high school, he was, like, an all-star, played well. But a late addition, not a ton of attention on the recruiting trail, but – you know, for a Rutgers team desperately needing depth, and talent. I think it was a useful addition. You know, what kind of impact he can make at Rutgers, I'm not sure. Maybe he can turn into a, you know, a bench player in a year or two. You know, a quality bench player, I should say. But, you know, they need bodies. They got one with Amari here. And it'll be interesting to watch, as Pico tries to pick things up on the recruiting trail. Josh, did you have any reactions to this commitment? You think it means anything for the team this year, or is this kind of a long-term addition?
Look, I mean, at this point, anyone who wants to play for Rutgers, it's kind of commendable that they can get them to go to New Jersey and play, because that program is definitely a little bit of a mess right now. But you know what? I mean, every year you're hoping Rutgers is on the up and up. My only hesitation is he's a 6'6" wing. I think he's incredibly raw. And if he's joining the 2016 mm-hmm. class, generally that means that he didn't have any offers, and getting signed in August means, that there's still a couple things that he needs to work on. He's not one of those guys that's going to step in and be an immediate impact player. But with that being said, he's at Rutgers. So if there's anywhere where he'll be able to probably play some minutes this year, be able to make some mistakes, learn, develop as a player, I think it's a good place for him. We were talking before about Missouri kind of expanding and playing games in different cities in the U.S. I think it's great that Rutgers is getting an international commit. International might be Canada, but still they're expanding their recruiting horizons. They're able to pick up a player from Canada. I think more for the program it means future for the success for sorry success for the future, as opposed to anything immediately right now. But maybe a year or two down the line, he could turn into a really nice wing player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, and one thing, you know, I think a lot of people forget, too, is, this may sound dumb, and this may depress Rutgers fans a little bit, but, they are in a very I'll just lay it, you know, they're in a terrible spot right now. You know, they were beyond awful last year. And I'm not, again, I know I say this all the time, but I'm not trying to rip on them, but you have to point it out. And the thing is, though, is that to get where they want to be, which is back in the NCAA tournament, which is back playing even just decent basketball, it has to be improvement from within. You know, they're not going to recruit their way out of this, at least not recruit their way out of this by, you know, obeying the rules, because, you know, Rutgers isn't a blue blood basketball program, and they certainly haven't played well enough over the last couple of years to where they're just suddenly going to start reeling in 4 and 5 stars. But, you know, even if he can provide a boost in, you know, in practice and on the scout team, you know, that alone would be worth it. And, you know, again, very thin team. They have, you know, they have scholarships available. They need just bodies and guys who can play. You know, they got riddled by injuries last year too. So I think this is something that could make a difference behind the scenes. We'll have to see. I wouldn't put a ton of stock that he's going to turn things around, but it is at least one boost for Steve Peagle. But before we move on from him, one thing I did want to know is, according to verbal commits, he had 3 other offers, which were Fairfield, Marquette, and USC. Admittedly, these were way earlier, so I'm not sure if they were actually committable at the point either then or when he committed to Rutgers, but I did just want to note that for people who might be yelling in their cars or whatever right now. but Josh, before we get going here, any final thoughts on, you know, Big Ten hoops, anything going on lately that you want to get out here before we end the podcast?
No, I mean, I think we pretty much touched on it all. I think that the actual date, the schedule release, is in 2 weeks. I'm not sure the exact date on that. It's usually a Sunday at the end of August, and that's when we'll get the actual dates for the schedule. The only reason that, to me, ends up being such a big deal is because, you know, a team that's playing well could end up having a really rough 3 or 4 game stretch in which they play the upper echelon of the conference in back-to-back-to-back games. And it could either make their season or entirely derail their season. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm hoping one of the Michigan-Wisconsin games ends up on a weekend so I get a chance to either make it out to Ann Arbor or Madison, because my brother's at Wisconsin, to see one of those games. But no, I think right now, you know, we got college football season coming up, which should be a great year, and we'll have the hoop schedule released, and I'm excited. It should be great.
Yeah. Last couple weeks of darkness here if you're a college football and college basketball fan. So excited again to get into it. But Josh, thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to having you on next time.
Perfect. Thank you, Thomas. Appreciate it.
Thanks. And just a reminder to everyone, that was Josh Stern. He's one of our writers. Does a lot of Michigan stuff, but he does touch on a couple of the other teams for BT Powerhouse. Highly recommend going to btpowerhouse.com. He has a Michigan schedule breakdown on there. Definitely worth a read. But with that, that's all we got for this time. We'll be back certainly when that schedule release comes out. Hopefully in a week or week and a half or so, you know, if any new news pops up. Obviously, you know, we're in kind of the dead point of the college basketball year, but there should be, you know, some big news coming up here shortly. I think we're like a month away from practice starting, or maybe a month, a little more. But, you know, getting close, I guess, is my only point. But with that, I'm Thomas Bendit. You can follow me on Twitter at TBendit. Again, encourage everyone to check out btpowerhouse.com, and we will see you next time. Thank you.